This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, and welcome to today's Barron's Live. I'm Abby Schultz, a senior writer at Barron's Penta. I have two very special guests today. Tom Friedman, a contemporary artist who works with all kinds of materials, often turning the everyday into some sort of surprise. We can see fun works of his in the background there. He's made 30-foot stainless steel figures formed out of roasting pans, all kinds of things. And then we also have musician George Clinton with us, the force behind the band's Parliament, Funkadelic, formed in the late 60s and still performing today and influencing musical artists today. Clinton's also a visual artist who took advantage of downtime during the pandemic to focus on making whimsical abstract works. Both Tom and George created new works of art that will appear on the September cover of Penta magazine. That's coming out this weekend. The covers are going to be minted as non-fungible tokens or NFTs, and they'll be auctioned on the Super Rare platform for a week. And that starts today, actually. So Tom and George, it's so great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Good to be here.
So I'll be speaking with both of you about your art, about the work you did for our covers, about NFTs. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone tuning in that you can write in questions. I'll try to get to them before the session is out today. So Tom, let me start with you. So your art's a lot of fun. Your 30 plus foot stainless steel sculptures. I mean, the sculptures behind you are like great. I saw something you did recently called Being. It was done this year. It had like a McDonald's cup in it and a rubber duck.
It was supposed to be in the shot, but the camera kind of cropped things.
Oh, that's too bad. It's very cool. I encourage
the thing, but I'm worried. I don't want to touch my computer. I don't want anything bad to happen.
That's probably smart. And as I mentioned just before we started, I saw a couple of your works at the Armory Show at Stephen Friedman's gallery. So everyone go there and check them out. It's very cool. And you have some shows coming up with Lehman Maupin in Seoul. You're going to be part of an exhibition in October and then in April, a solo exhibition in Seoul. Your work's considered conceptual, but as you put it to me, it's really direct. And this may be a kind of a hard question to start off with, but can you just tell us a bit about what drives you when making art? What are you after?
I think it has a lot to do with a momentum that has been going on since childhood, when that crayon was placed in my hand and making the first mark on a piece of paper. I kind of say that I never put the crayons down. I just kept drawing, making things. And I think that I kind of explore the world through the creative process. William Burroughs once said that, William Burroughs, the poet and writer, once said, "Language is a virus from outer space." And I think that I had a lot of immunity to that virus. So language is kind of a secondary thing for me. So making art, the drive for it, is kind of my way of exploring. And a curiosity. I just learn things so much through that process. And I try to share that with the people that are looking at my artwork. It's kind of a drive, a need for that. I've been just making art my whole life. I probably every day I there's a creative process that happens. And so I guess that momentum is something that's sort of camouflages what your kind of your intention is. or my, what my intention is as an artist. And I always ask myself, why am I doing this? Because I see what I get out of it. I don't know what other people get, only from what they tell me. But I think that good art kind of leaves a mental and a physical memory. And I try to create that residue so that after someone sees something that I make, they go out into their everyday lives, and that residue, that memory sort of influences them. It can change the way they see. I mean, ultimately, I think I'm trying to promote sort of a fluidity of thinking.
That's great. And can you just quickly tell us what the name of the works are behind you, just so we know?
they're kind of works in progress.
Cool.
The figure.
Yeah.
It's actually, what I did was I brought, there are two of them, and the black one, or that one's the prototype that was made out of window insulation that bubbles. My work really, it requires, the detail is really important. You're kind of just seeing the outline of it.
Right.
But it's the prototype that made the one that is cast in, the one before cast in stainless steel and then chrome plated. And then the prototype, I painted this jet black.
Oh, okay.
And I put them together. They're not supposed to be together, but it kind of looks like a shadow.
Totally.
But my work tries to create kind of a mutual experience with the person looking at it. And I always think that, you know, art sometimes has this default authority to it. And I like the sculpture sort of saying, I don't know, whatever, you know.
I've
never seen a sculpture doing that gesture, and it's such a gesture.
That is so true. Well, George, let me turn to you. You are more than well known as the force behind Parliament and Funkadelic. You're a musician, singer, band leader, and you're known for that and for the influence you've had on other forms of funk and hip hop, specifically in artists like Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, Dr. Dre, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I could go on. Now you've just turned 80. Since I talked to you last, actually, I talked to you just before your birthday, and a replica of, as we were talking about this before, of your iconic stage prop, the Mothership, is part of an exhibition on Afrofuturism at the Oakland Museum of Art. But you've also dived deeper into becoming a visual artist recently with your first solo show coming up at Spillman Blackwell Fine Art in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. It's called Free Your Mind. That's opening October 2nd at Spillman Blackwell, and Spring McManus Art Advisory is working with you on that. So tell us, how did you kind of start to draw and paint, and what has that evolution been like for you?
Well, you know, over the years, we've been on the road, you know, traveling, just, and I carried a doodling pad, a sketchbook or whatever, you know, just to kill the time. And during that time, we've gotten known for our album covers, you know, Overton Lord, Pedro Bell. That was part of our music, that whole imagery. And the fact that we were costume driven and motherships and props, all those props, the art became part of me describing what I was seeing or wanted to see, you know, as a visual. Coming out of the 68, 69, doing the Peter Mac in the, you know, the psychedelic era, the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper, all of that was the visual imagery, along with all the riots and the things that was going on when we first hit the scene. So the art part of it just became my way of spending time doodling, and you know, I'm colorblind too, so I really didn't have any kind of thing to relate to until, you know, years later, over to Lord, who's lived with me forever. We lived together, do all the album covers. He started giving me directions on, because, you know, I was colorblind, started aligning the colors up to where the, I knew where each shade was at. To me, it's going to be about shades and tones. Mm. It's going to be about, like, the music, like I do music, the mids, the highs, the lows, and the, in between, the, I relate to it like that. But over the years, he actually got me to almost see colors just by having to look that close. I never really looked that close at first, but as I started paying that much attention and people started actually appreciating it, like anything else, it becomes a habit. And it started being the habit the same way I wanted to do music. I couldn't wake up in the morning and run straight to the art room and start painting. You know, and when this pandemic thing happened, I'm going to tell the whole story.
Yeah, please.
The pandemic thing happened. I made up my mind that I was going to turn out some work because that gave me a lot of relaxation, and I didn't have to worry about not going on the road, not doing this. Matter of fact, I was happy because I never miss a show. We've been working for 30 years, and we've always worked. I was glad to be off the road and actually do something that felt good to me. You know, the pandemic thing, painting was really becoming an obsession. We'd reach out, that's when we reached out to Spring and actually got a manager. I think we sold one painting in Japan for $20,000 and I immediately got a habit.
Yeah, that's addictive.
Oh, I've painted 500 pieces since then, you know, getting ready for this first show. But
yeah,
that got me so into it. Like, basically, I used to just do my autograph. I used to doodle a dog.
Right.
That was the beginning of your dogs. And of course, the Atomic Dog with the record, I've always had good history with dogs. And so, like I said, the dog from the doodling actually got me into actually painting, you know, other things. I mean, lately, I've just been into sci-fi, you know.
You've often been into sci-fi, though, right? The mothership.
Yeah, but I'm talking about now, and as I've been looking at the aliens, agendas, and all of I've been binging on all of those black holes and the what aliens would look like going in and out of dimensions and stuff. That's the stuff that's been on my mind when I've been painting lately, especially with the pandemic, you know, the bug, the virus, imagery of all of that kind of mingled together. And I see a lot of imagery of what would life forms be like, made out of different gases and blah, blah, blah. All of that stuff is, you know, what I'm entertaining.
Yeah.
In my own head. You know?
That's so great. So can you just tell us a little bit about the exhibition? And then we're going to go more, but we're going to go back to the dogs, but in a bit, but tell me about the exhibition.
Oh, the exhibition is basically the stuff I've been doing for the pandemic. It's mostly, like I say, entities, you know, that travel in and out of dimensions, what they would look like made out of different things than the carbon that we are made out of, and what they would look like when you try to like put them on scopes or try to measure what they, the imagery. I've dealt with that a lot, just watching all these alien agendas. What would that look, what would they look like? I'm into the dog star. You know, the planet Sirius, you know, that's a dog star. So I looked at all of that stuff around it. Some of them with the circles around them. Some of them just gas, just the shapes of different formations of gas thing. So I got a lot of paintings that's what I was entertaining a lot with the backdrop of the virus itself as a entity.
Yeah.
Well, I was bugging, in other words.
Right, an alien in and of itself.
Right. You know.
So, Tom, I wanted to ask you to talk about the cover art that you did for us. I don't know if you can see this. I'm going to show it. There we go. Can you see it? I don't know. I'm putting it in the frame. I do not have a cover of with George's art on it. I'm getting it, but I don't have it now, unfortunately. So that was a little frustrating. But I wanted you all to see that. You turn to, well, I wanted you, the name of the work that you did is called Global Currency. And I wanted you just to tell us a little bit about, I know the answer to this, but just tell our audience about how you came up with the concept, what was involved in creating it, and also just through the name of it, which kind of references this whole idea of NFTs, a global currency, you know, and I should say just before you get started, just that if for our audience who, if they don't know, NFTs are unique digital works, in this case art, that prove the NFT proves that the work is authentic and who owns it, this is done by being minted on the blockchain. So anyway, tell us a little bit more about your project.
Well, I was asked to do this NFT for Barron's Penta, and like you said before, I approach things very directly. So, you know, I went to Barron's, from Barron's to finance to money, and then so I kind of think in word clouds, and you know, in a way, and then its association with the NFTs was connected to cryptocurrency, and which relates to decentralized banking or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of this circular logic of constructing a global, this an image of like global currency, I mean, which is what it's titled, where I went on the internet and looked for the best quality images I could of paper currencies from every country, had a list of countries, and would then create a folder of all the currencies. Then in Photoshop, I would superimpose them where they all had equal weight and equal opacity. So it created this blurry image in that was iconic of money or paper money. And then I approach it very directly, but then thinking about it, it becomes kind of like this artifact. This is something old. And with the idea of the future and cryptocurrency, that paper currency would kind of become this artifact, this thing of the past. I think, you know, the fact that it's blurry and with all the colors, it's, I mean, it's, I could only do so much with the resolution of the currency. So when you zoom in, it becomes fairly pixelated. And I was interested in the, a lot of the NFTs, the early NFTs, they really play upon that old pixelated imagery, you know, like the crypto punks and everything like that.
Yep.
So it kind of came from that sort of direct thinking. And the cover is somewhat different than the original one, which I will also go up for auction, I think on Super Rare soon. And that shows, I created a hard edge image around the image to make it look more real, even though it's purely digitally constructed. So it looks like it's on, you know, pinned to the wall or something, and it's got some shadows.
Right. Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's so interesting. The result is very beautiful and kind of impressionistic, I guess. It's
Turner-esque.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it does evoke that. And that's right. It'll be interesting to see how it does as a, and not how it does, but just it as an NFT in and of itself, the artwork. So George, for your NFT, you turn to a familiar subject. You call it My Dawg, D-A-W-G. and that was inspired by Atomic Dog, which was your number one R&B song from 82, which was on your debut album cover, if I have this right, Computer Games.
Computer Games, right.
Yeah. And so that it kind of, the fact you selected that image for this was sort of interesting to me because it really nicely connects an earlier techno revolution to our present techno revolution. But I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about why you like dogs, which have always been an important theme for you, and why you turned to Atomic Dog for this project.
Well, I've always been interested in, you know, the difference between instinctive happenings and the ability to think and articulate, you know, as humans do. And dogs was like a problem for me because they were like our best, that's man's best friend. And at the same time, when you really want to describe something really bad, when you want to treat somebody bad, you treat them like a dog. Those two things just never made sense to me. And I would always, when I did Atomic Dog out on all fours in the streets, trying to compete, you know, ain't nothing but the dog in me. And when I used that theory, I was feeling kind of doggish. I was, you know, whatever my problem was at that time, I was feeling dogged out.
Yeah.
But when I talk about it, I was liberated from the feeling. And I felt like right now is a new time. We getting ready to jump the planet. This is, you know, Elon Musk is flying off for a joyride. This is that time. Futuristic dogs now. We get ready to go to the dog star, which I related to Planet Series.
Yeah.
I'm really into canine, clone canines. I'm into dogs.
Yeah.
So I figured when this NFT thing came up, I had a whole collection of dogs. Mm-hmm. I got a whole collection that I wanted to do, you know, like that Beeple guy with all his paintings.
Yep.
I wanted to do one like that, but then we chose just this one, which I did last out of the collection.
Okay.
And I feel good about the nuclear dogs, atomic dogs, space dogs. It's that kind of, you know, a close kinship to canine.
Yeah, that's great. And I understand, yeah, you're going to do a limited edition series of them separately from the cover. Yeah. That's great. You mentioned Beeple. NFTs have existed for a few years, but they didn't come to the attention of the wider world until Beeple, really, some other well-known digital artists began minting and selling. And they started doing that on platforms like Super Rare and Nifty Gateway, OpenSea, there's a bunch of them. And then the auction houses saw what was going on and said, oh, we want to do this too. You've each touched on this a little bit, but if you could talk a little bit more about what you first thought of them when you heard of NFTs and if your views have kind of evolved since then. Maybe Tom, you could start.
Well, I first became aware of them when, you know, Beeple sold that piece for and then I started checking those things out. Didn't quite know what it was. And then, so it's sort of the first way of having a digital authenticity. So there's something digital that is authentic. Yeah. And I don't understand how that happens. I've heard the word blockchain, and I guess that's
why. Yeah.
And But it's something new. I think the way that I think of it is a kind of a, you know, at this point, it's a collectible that people collect. And then there's the question of how do people display it? You know, how is it presented, or whether that's that important? Sometimes people collect things like cards and they just go into a safe deposit box or something like that. But I think of gaming, like in the world of gaming, the metaverse that is beginning to become more, I guess, powerful because the technology is growing. And so I think like in the metaverse, which is like a virtual reality space that's associated with 3D modeling, we experience a lot of the digital stuff on 2D places right now, but when it changes to 3D, then let's say, you know, you in the metaverse, you have a house in the metaverse, and what do you do with your house? You put things in there. You might not need a kitchen, but you know, you're going to want to put maybe some pictures on the wall or some have some sculptures or something like that. So, but I mean, the NFTs they're interesting right now because they're so new. It's hard to say what's going to happen with them. I mean, but it is interesting that it raises a lot of questions, interesting questions about, you know, what is real, what's not. And value as well. Value is really interesting. I think about like you have a dollar bill and then a $100 bill. And if you think about the intrinsic value of a dollar bill and a $100 bills, you know, you have the paper and the ink, but the dollar bill refers to something else and it has that value. And the $100 bill has another value that's more, but in reality, they're, you know, the value of the material is the same. So it raises a lot of interesting questions. So
yeah, for sure.
I have no answers.
No, I don't think any of us do. George, what about you? And also I should say, excuse me, your NFT. Oh, I'm going to just let you talk because I have to cough. So tell us your views.
Well, when I first heard it, like everybody else, we was trying to figure out what it was, why it was. But as soon as I heard about it, I related it to the same world as Bitcoin. And to me, all of that seemed like the mapping out of the new realities we getting ready to embark on in for another 1,000 years or so. Look like they're remapping the new realities that we're going with. Somebody suggested somewhere along the line back in some period that gold was the main thing, the most important, a precious metal and blah, blah, blah. They mapped that out somewhere along the line and everybody agreed. I get the feeling that they're mapping out the new realities and the new logics and of this new digital world. I keep referring to off planet universal.
Yeah.
I think they're doing, like you said, I think they're getting mementos that you can keep and hold, you know. And I was the first one to have a Bitcoin. I was the first one to have a digital painting. They're going to be worth something in the fact that, you know, you were the first. It's like landing, you know, in America. You got these people now exploring all over the place and exploring the new realities of things. And the first ones that do it, they're going to be collector's items, you know. And I think that these paintings is part of that. Like say the gaming things, you can buy houses, you can furnish them, you can buy clothes for your doll babies. Those realities are going to be like on Star Trek. You can go in there and have whatever holiday you want it to be and dress up like you're going to have all these realities of virtual, and virtual going to be indistinguishable from reality at some point. You know, and everybody's going to agree on it. And I think these are just the beginnings of that. So people collect these, but will be the first one. Oh, I was the first one in on that, whatever that reality is.
No, that's interesting. The buyer of Beeple's Every Days, the first 5,000 days, it was called, who bought it for $69 million. He said he felt like it was it was making art history. Like, this was a work that, you know, kind of set a line in the sand. Yeah. So that's really, it is interesting. And I guess that remains to be seen. I am it, actually in the cover of Penta, we do talk about this a little bit. Everybody should go out and get it and read it, since we're now at the end of our time together, unfortunately. I would love to keep talking to both of you. Actually, one question that we got from the audience was about where the George, where your art show is being held. And so, yes, that's in New Orleans. So just to answer that question for our audience, if they didn't catch that before. And they have to go to Seoul to see your solo exhibition, Tom.
Yeah, just not that far away.
Not that far away.
if I can get there.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, who knows what travel will be like by April 2022. Hopefully we'll all be able to fly around the world again. But thank you both. I really appreciate your time today, for being part of this experiment with us at Barron's Penta. So much fun. And I really appreciate hearing just, you know, your thoughts on art and the world and NFTs and all that. Barron's Live will be back on Monday with Senior Managing Editor Lauren Rublin and Deputy Editor Ben Levinson. They're going to be talking about the outlook for financial markets, industry sectors, individual stocks, and all of that stuff. Thanks, everyone. And thank you, Tom and George. Stay safe and healthy.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.